Hello, it is 7:30 p.m. in New York, 2:30 a.m. in Johannesburg, and 7:30 a.m. in Bangkok. Welcome to the Expat Happy Hour, brought to you today from Thailand. This is Sunday Schneiderbean from sundaybean.com. I'm a solution-oriented coach and intercultural strategist for individuals and organizations, and I am on a mission to help you adapt and succeed when living abroad and get you through any life transition. My son is 9 and going on 16, and here is what I know to be true. Being a parent is tough, and being a parent of a third culture kid is tougher. So the thought of being a parent of a third culture kid who's a teen, well, let's just say that makes my heart pound. The parenting side plus the prospect of launching them off to a school somewhere on the planet where they don't exactly call one place home can be daunting. And I don't know if it's quite, you know, what's quite ahead of me. And I know if you have anywhere kids from, you know, preteens, teens, you're probably asking yourself too, what's ahead of you. And for that very reason, I've invited an expert on this exact topic to help me and to help you and offer some insight. So it is my absolute pleasure to welcome Ms. Megan Norton from Intercultural Transitions. Megan, thank you for joining us on Expat Happy Hour today.
Sunday, thank you so much. This is such a privilege. As you know, I listen to your podcast and other podcasts on my commute, so it's such an honor.
And Megan is awesome. She has put in a lot of effort to be with us today, including an hour and a half drive in the snow and blizzard. So Megan, I really appreciate you being here. So, you know, for parents like me, you know, we really want a roadmap for all of this, because by the time you get your kids in the school system, you know, all those choices have been made. So before we get into the detail and what that looks like, I want those of you listening to know that you're in good hands. So Megan is an intercultural training specialist and a researcher, and she focuses on trends in transnational higher education and its influence on intercultural relations. Her experience as an intercultural trainer combined with her experience in international education helps her really design what she calls socio-emotional and educational programming that is tailored just to globally mobile students like probably yours. And the other bonus is that Megan is an adult third culture kid. So she's lived in 10 countries and 5 U.S. states and is passionate about supporting third culture kids in transitioning from secondary school to university. So Megan is part of the team at Intercultural Transitions. Along with Megan, she works very closely with Dr. Hannah Morris, who is also an international educator who focuses on college transition. So Megan, thank you for offering your wisdom today.
Yeah, pleasure. I'm delighted.
So before we dive into TCK identity, I want to share a little story that helps us back up a little bit, because for some of the listeners, they might be asking, what's TCK? So yes. I was jogging on the dusty streets of Ouagadougou with a friend of mine. This was back a couple years ago. And she's lovely. She's from Belgium, and so is her husband. And they've been living abroad for at least a decade. And their children were along with them. I think the last post they were in was also an African posting. And she was so kind. She was brainstorming with me topics that I could do for workshops at the international school. And I threw in an idea, and I said, what about a night on TCK identity? And she's like, what do you mean TCK? And I said, you know, TCK, third culture kid, like your kids. And she goes, I don't have TCKs. My kids are Belgium. So Megan, I know what you're thinking, right? I had to explain to her, the term is used to refer to children who are raised in a culture other than their parents, passport culture, let's say, for a significant time of their early development. So she looked at me, you know, with her eyes wide open and went, oh, I have TCKs. So I don't know, Megan, there might be people who are raising TCKs and don't really know it. Can you, you know, tell our listeners briefly more about TCKs and why it's important to know about, especially when it comes to ideas of identity?
Yeah, it's a huge topic. And TCK, the label Third Culture Kid, has actually taken on a more broader and inclusive terminology called cross-cultural kid. And cross-cultural kid invites identities that perhaps families from bicultural or interracial marriages and who are raising kids who speak multiple languages, who perhaps also have immigrated or migrated to a different country. So there are various ways that CCK or TCK can be used, but a common thread throughout all of these variations and just different ways parents can name or label, or even kids can call themselves to create an identity for themselves. The thread is, where is my sense of belonging in this world? Where am I from? Where is home? Where is my community? So these are all huge questions that kids and parents grapple with when they are confronted with a lifestyle that is highly mobile or has had the opportunity to be in multiple communities or cultures.
Right. Right. And I love that you brought up the CCKs, right? The cross-cultural kids. Mm-hmm. Because you don't even have to be mobile to feel like you're straddling two cultures. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And even there are educational CCKs where perhaps the child is educated in a school system that's perpetuates or populates a different perspective or culture than what is practiced in the home. Yeah. So the child is negotiating different identities in an education system versus family culture.
Yep, that's great. Yeah, and that happens. You don't even have to leave your own country to be able to have that happening. So
exactly.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. So this conversation is not just for globally mobile families. This is for any families that find their children sort of, you know, putting their feet into two different worlds, even if they stay within the same community. So that's really important to know.
Yes.
I think it's important to know too, mm-hmm. because just like this on the jog with my friend, if you're not aware of it, if you don't have a name for it or mm-hmm. a way to explain it, you might feel like something's wrong, something's missing. You haven't been able to find a way to see your experience, and then you can feel like something's wrong.
Yes, exactly. And it's a way also that you're not minimizing someone else's experience. Mm-hmm. If you say, oh, I have that exact same. No, you don't. If mm-hmm. if you have had a globally mobile childhood versus perhaps a domestic TCK, mm-hmm. very different experiences. But again, the commonality, the thread is this grappling of who am I? What is my personal identity?
Yeah. So tell us more. This idea about identity, that's a big one, I think, for any teen. Tell us a little bit about why it's so important to really give attention and language to CCKs
right.
at that age.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, it's such a complex topic for any teenager. It's an age of identity exploration, of self-focus, of this in-between of emerging adulthood from adolescence. So it's a really, it's negotiating for independence. So all of that happens for any teenager, whether in a monocultural, homogeneous community or in a background where you are negotiating different cultures. So for a TCK teen, there's this added layer of complexity of where they fit in. So when I say a teenager who lives in for example, a monocultural community, they have had time to develop a strong sense and root of where they belong, where they fit in vis-a-vis the community, the culture, the place, and even their family. But for example, a highly mobile teen, which is my personal experience, I moved when I was 13, I moved when I was 16, and I moved when I was 18. I was not thinking about personal identity. I was thinking about, how do I fit in? What are the name brands to wear? What's the slang?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's an in-between identity in an in-between age that really needs some critical self-reflection and understanding of what my purpose and meaning and significance in this world is.
Because I think, you know, when I think about this topic, My kids are, will be, no matter where we live, will be cross-cultural kids because I'm in a binational marriage. So I kind of knew what I was getting into. but the thing is this idea about belonging, it's so important. And yes, it's important for teens. It's important for anybody. And the thing that goes through my mind is I once heard a saying. It was something like, if you don't give your children a sense of identity, someone else will. Like, you know what I mean? Like if you don't create a context where they know who they are and who their sense of identity, that it could be easily that someone sweeps them off into groups that give them an identity in more of a negative way. I don't know how to say this without sounding like, you know, someone's going to take my kid and put him in a cult. I don't mean it like that. I mean, like, you know, your child is going to look for a sense of identity and belonging and needs to find his or her own way. At the same time, there might be vulnerability. And this is what, you know, you probably know this even better from the research than I do around the vulnerability of children who have had a CCK or TCK experience and didn't find that sense of belonging, look for it in extreme groups, like through drugs or through, you know, sort of claustrophobic church environments, or who knows, right? That there is research that people search and search in ways that gets destructive for them.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why if you've read, I know you've read, but for people who are listening, if they've read any excerpts from the TCK Growing Up Among Worlds, quote unquote, Bible, we're speaking to the importance of having anchors and anchored communities or an anchored sense of place. And that could be in different communities. It could also be anchored in family. So having these ties or these understandings of this is who I belong to, this is who claims me and who I claim. And so it's like three main anchors: to place, to community, and to family.
Place, community, and family. So that's really important. Mm-hmm. Place, as a mobile family, we can create connection to family for wherever we call home. I know for me, my children have a connection to North Dakota, the state I was born and raised in, but haven't lived in for, a long, long, long time. I do not want to out my age. But place, and I didn't pick that actually. One of my sons actually picked it for himself, but I gave him enough opportunity where we kept going back consistently every summer for him to claim that spot. Community, said, so place can be tough when you're globally mobile because that place feels like it's always changing, but there could be a way that you could create another third location. Community, I'm guessing it's where you're at, but what about, you know, in a mobile situation, community, how can you build community for people who are globally mobile?
Yeah, this is a question that teens ask. And I pose the question of what extracurricular activities are you involved in? Do you do horseback riding? Are you part of a band? These are all different sub-communities that you are a part of, that you offer your service, you offer your talents and abilities to, and you are connected to other people through those abilities. So identifying different ways of how you've built community through extracurricular activities is one way for teenagers to do it. It could also be different religious affiliations. Perhaps you meet on a regular basis if you identify with a certain faith-based organization. And also culturally, cultural traditions. So perhaps you had an experience where you lived in China and you celebrate Chinese, you began celebrating Chinese New Year when you lived there. How have you continued that tradition in a new community? So you perhaps find a Chinese community that you have integrated with as well, and you celebrate Chinese New Year with them.
I love that idea, because what it is the place changes, but the sense of community is, there's a continuity in, for example, if you're a student in the teen years, I would say high school, other places call it different, but that you played soccer the whole time, or you played trombone the whole time, that you know that that's what you did, your thing, and you always met with musicians or in that church community or whatever. I like that idea. Yes. That they can find continuity. We talked about place, community. What was the third one?
Family.
Family. And that one is, it seems obvious, but tell us more about that.
Mm-hmm. So I even incorporate friends with this, because in my experience growing up, sometimes my friends and my parents' friends, they became almost like family to us when we were abroad. So I like to say, who are your anchored relationships? So perhaps they are blood and flesh family. Maybe they're adopted family that you even call auntie or uncle. So it's so important for families and teenagers to recognize who has had major influences in their lives and be able to recognize, you know what, this is a person who's been a mentor. This is a person who's helped me or encouraged me through, you know, identity perhaps, or through just being a teenager. So that relationship should be nurtured. And there are several ways, of course, to do it now through virtual spaces. But I always find it so meaningful when, it's been more possible these days with cheaper airfare and different modes of transportation to meet face to face to maintain those social relationships that are so meaningful to you.
Yeah. That's so important. I love that idea. You know, in our family, I have some of my closest girlfriends, I refer to them, you know, as Auntie Nicole, Auntie Yvette, and my boys at breakfast will be like, Mom, is that really my auntie? You know, I'm like, well, they feel like sisters. So we call them that. So I like the idea of that you include in the definition of family, your adopted family, which could be friends. And I know, you know, that in the teenage years, that friends are so central to a teen's experience. I know I still have some very, very good friends from a small group of friends from my teenage years. But because they've known me for so long, it feels so nice to be able to refer back to them, right? So that's important. Okay, so I think people have gotten a lot of ideas on what they can do to create those anchors. Again, the anchors are place, community, and what we're calling right now is adopted family. Family and friends, your core. And you're right, face-to-face, if you can make it, once a year even, can really do a lot to build the relationship. So can we talk a little bit, this has been so useful. And for those people who are not nerdy interculturalists like we are and are just learning this, I hope it's been helpful. I think it's amazing just this is stuff I am interested in, but also for me to think about how can I more mindfully, support my kids as they get older. And right now they're young. You know, I have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old. So tell us about, what should parents be thinking about to support our kids as they get older? And we can go backwards, like from 18 to 16 to 18, you know, to early teens or preteen, however you want to talk about it. I'm curious, what should parents be aware of? How can we support our children as they're making choices about this transition to higher education? Because that's one of the things that you really do well at International Transitions is, or Intercultural Transitions, is to help the, you know, cross-cultural children or now adults get on with their life after they've been under their parents' wing.
Yeah, and I'd actually like to begin with your age of your age children.
Okay, great.
Preteen.
Yep.
So, because I really believe that I call them building blocks. So communication is king. I know that's cliche, but it's important for parents to begin to recognize how they communicate with their children. And primarily, I frame this also with love languages, because how does your child feel your love? Is it through acts of service, through quality time, gift giving. So these are ways that a child feels validated, acknowledged, and affirmed through through different communication styles.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Megan, that's Gary Chapman that does the five love languages.
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, we can look it. Look it up later.
We can look it up
if you're interested. Yeah. The five love languages. If you're listening right now and you've never heard of it, it is transformational in how you have a relationship with your partner, but also how you can connect with your kids. So I'm just going to recap for those who aren't familiar with the love languages. It's how do your kids hear love? So if you buy them a gift, if you do something nice for them, if you say something kind to them, if you touch them on the arm. Those are some examples of love languages. So if you haven't heard of it, check it out. It's really useful. So you were saying being mindful of what their love language is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because the home is such a critical place to create a safety net. And I think these building blocks of communication creates that. And I have several conversations with adult TCKs, and I always pose the question of where's home, mm-hmm. of course. And a lot of them say it's the safety net where I feel secure, where I feel valued, where I feel seen and heard and understood. Mm-hmm. And it's the responsibility of the parents to create that atmosphere and environment of comforter, listener, and also cheerleader. So that begins, of course, at the early age, hopefully. But also the parents should begin to recognize, be aware of how the child communicates emotionally, what makes them really angry, what makes them happy or fearful. So it's opening up these conversations and heightening your own awareness of how they communicate their emotions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. And what I kind of like about this is it's really asking you to step up to the next level as a parent. And maybe if you were living in a context where you were in a monocultural environment, or maybe you weren't in a cross-cultural family, that you would just let default happen. And what I love about this is that it's because of this context, you're asking yourself to take it to the next level, which would benefit any child.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it is that much more important.
So, right. And so that's the foundation I would begin with. You know, preteen, they need to earn your trust, and you need to earn their mm-hmm. trust. So then the next, as the cognitive abilities start to form, giving your child more agency, personal agency and choice, because over and over again, I hear TCK say, you know what, I had no choice growing up. I didn't have a choice where we're going to move, where, you know, our house was, if we were going to have a yard, if we weren't going to have a yard. I mean, even in my own personal lived experience, we didn't even have our own furniture. The furniture was provided in the houses that we right. moved to. So I have anxiety buying furniture these days, you know. So I honestly have mixed yeah. matched of IKEA. I don't even know. I wish that I, you know, had developed that decision-making skill a little bit earlier.
But you know, it's so simple. I mean, I know a lot of embassy families, they don't get to choose their furniture. And that's so simple. We don't, you know, take that for granted. But you're right that right. if we can't choose our furniture, mm-hmm. which would be really frustrating, then what can you choose? So yeah. we're talking more of the teenage now.
Yeah, right. So giving them more autonomy to create choices and to allow them to make mistakes in their choices, to understand what are the consequences, what are the trade-offs. Yeah. So they're learning this skill in a safe environment where also then you can help them reflect, what could I have done differently in my choice to have a different right. result? And in the teenage years, this balance of autonomy and dependency, it can seem contradictory or paradoxical, mm-hmm. but that's the whole TCK life, yeah. actually. But relinquishing this control while providing the necessary support can strengthen the bond between the parent and the child.
You know, I think it's an important topic because, you know, I live in South Africa and at the moment, and I think I've said many times, I wouldn't want to live here when my kids are teenagers because it's hard to give them that freedom. You know, if I can contrast, there's what I love about where we live. We live in a really safe environment. For those of you who are not familiar with the reputation South Africa has as being high crime. Yes, it does have high crime, but you can also have, you know, a crime-free, wonderful experience there with no trouble. But you know, you do take precautions, like living in estates or the way you have your house and all that. And now there's always teenagers who are throwing eggs at people's cars and doors. And you know what? And they ring, they have this bell in front of my house, and they ring the bell at midnight. It wakes me up. And you know what? I cannot blame them, because they are young and want to rebel, and they can't in any other way, because they're in, you know, they're in this contained context. And I compare that to, you know, even life in Switzerland. You know, 12-year-olds are riding the tram, they're going to movies by themselves, you know, they're coming home on the, you know, the night bus. And so there's, depending on where you live, you can give them, you know, a much wider range or a much smaller range of choice. And what I'm hearing you say is, pay attention if you do live in a place where choices are limited, because that's even more important to find and create ways that they can experiment.
Exactly, Sunday. And this was my personal experience. I moved from Japan when I was 16 to Israel, and I had a lot more freedom in terms of transportation, hanging out with friends in Japan, than it was in Israel, where we were limited on public transportation options. So exactly. But you know, you have a conversation with your parents where you're going to be and what's allowed, what's not allowed. But this also, so moving into choices though, what also I really want to highlight for teenagers is having the skill of knowing personal boundaries, because I think TCKs can fall into this trap in university. I just want to fit in. I just want to fit in. I just want to be normal. And they just let go of all personal boundaries or responsibilities that they know better. And
can you give me an example of that? Like, what's something that happens that's pretty common?
Okay. Yes. Okay. I can give you an example. This girl goes to a party and this guy's, you know, flirting with her, and she says, they have a great conversation, but he's like, let me have your number. And she's like, no, I don't really want to give you my number. Yeah, let me have your number. So she gives him her number. And I ask her about it. I said, why? Why? You didn't want to. Well, you know, he paid attention to me. You know, it doesn't really mean anything. I just want to be nice. And right then and there, I said, you know, if you do one little thing, if you're being nice, you can be taken advantage of, you know, in just, just one, if you're letting down your guard, if you're, you know, not being aware of what that means, and perhaps even expectations of what that means, then no, you need to be aware of what you want, and be safe, and understand that perhaps that gesture, you're just being nice, can be misinterpreted in another context.
And that's especially true across cultures, right? I mean, there's your gestures can be really misconstrued depending on where you're at. And what I'm also hearing in this story is her boundary was, no, I don't want to. And she did it anyway. So this idea of personal boundaries. So watching personal boundaries, understanding what they are, honoring them. What else?
Yeah. Being mindful of your time. I think that in the teenage years that you are developing, well, how to prioritize your responsibilities and your free time. And when you are in university for the first time and are in charge of your own schedule, and there are a million options for you to do, a million different clubs and student organizations to be involved in that are really attractive, really exciting to check out. But being aware of prioritizing what needs to be done first and scheduling out in a way that's clear to you and to even your roommate, perhaps, just understanding what are the trade-offs for your choices.
And I hear, this is where I hear the sense of belonging comes back again, that if you're in university and you're hungry for that sense of belonging, or you don't have the anchors that we talked about, that you'd be looking for those anchors in clubs or organizations. And that can be positive to create that sense of belonging. But if it's too much, then they lose sight of actually the coursework that they're there for.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is the biggest hurdle? Or maybe there's not one, maybe there's, many based on the context of the individual that comes in. But what are some of the big hurdles that these, CCKs or TCKs come into university with that are important for us to know about? Because we always worry, I worry about, well, what if my, kids go to Switzerland and this is a challenge they face. What if they go to school in the US and that's a challenge they face? There's always these scenarios that you have in your mind. So what should a parent be thinking of, and how can they have, what conversation should parents be having with kids to help them understand that's going to be tricky?
Yeah, this is a great segue into what I wanted to talk about with teens age 17 and 18 right before going to university. And that is having conversations, again, about expectations. So one of the biggest hurdles that I've heard from parents, and also retrospectively from TCKs who have graduated university, they wish that the parents had communicated more about what are the financial expectations, social behavior, communication aspects of this transition. So this should happen before you go to university. And this is a hurdle in itself because you are creating a plan, you're creating a roadmap of what that transition will look like a year from now, 6 months from now. And for nerds like us who look at different transition models, I would really recommend looking at the model called the transition bridge. And that was popularized by David Pollack, and Michael Pollack now continues his work, his father's work, with TCK care and community flow, a community care of flow. Community, the flow of community care. So basically you're looking at what do you need to what are tangible things you need to be planning for 6 months out? What do you need to recognize and realize and kind of expect during the transition phase? Like, for example, the summer before you enter university, that is such a chaotic, but you could understand what the chaos to come will look like. Be prepared for that. And then, of course, the other side of transition, which is becoming involved again into the community. And then that stage for the TCK at that point, they are alone. And then the parents have perhaps gone back to the other country or city. So that looks different for the parent and for the TCK teen at that point. But what I want to focus on in regards to the transition bridge is also the RAFT model, which is popularized if you have an image of a raft, building your raft. So that is, again, another model that's explicit in the TCK quote-unquote Bible, and also Tina Quick, who wrote The Global Nomad's Guide to University Transition. She talks a lot about what specific strategies you should do at each stage of the raft, which is reconciliation. The R stands for reconciliation, the A for affirmation, the F is for farewell, saying goodbye, and then the T, of course, is thinking destination. So that's the plan for pre-departure. I call it pre-departure for university. So the hurdle is creating that plan in itself.
Right, exactly. And what I've heard you say before in other conversations is that, if you're a family that is familiar with the book from David C. Pollock and Ruth Van Reken, that the TCK Bible, that you might know about the raft paradigm, about what to do and how to transition your children for the next, you know, from one country to the next. But don't forget that exact process is important to apply when they go to a school. I think it's sometimes, you know, we have the tools in our hands and we forget to use them.
Exactly. And if there's one thing I want to stress is being proactive in your search and preparation and communication with your teens and your support networks. There's so many resources to consider and tap into to help you as a parent, to help your teen and your family. I mean, it affects the nuclear family. It affects the extended family. So it's never too early to consider the logistics and priorities of the transition.
Well, what I'm hearing around, you know, as you get closer to the university age, that, you know, you can feel powerless in this process as a parent because you don't know where they'll get accepted. You can't control how they'll feel once they get there. But where you do have control is in mindfully creating the raft to help them make their transition and be the one who's out there proactively supporting your kids through a mindful transition. And the transition continues once they get there, and then renegotiating how you do family when you're separated and outside of the nest, as they say. And for some people, this happens earlier if you send your kids to boarding school. So some of these things might be relevant in other ways. So, and I know that you know, you've got limited time today, so I want to make sure that we can hear from you. What are you up to at Intercultural Transitions? I know that your motto is preparing globally mobile students for success in college and beyond. Tell us what you and Hannah are up to, and where can people find out more about you?
Yeah, Sunday, we are so excited about what's happening with Intercultural Transitions. We are headed to Europe in a couple weeks to deliver in-person workshops at international schools, at U.S. embassies, and in communities that have globally mobile families and dependents. And we're so excited because we've done a lot of virtual workshops in facilitating conversation with parents and with teenagers about what's next in life. What is this transition? This huge transition, really. I can't de-emphasize just how significant it is for a TCK teen, because it is the first move without the family support unit, which has gone with them their entire life. And of course, exceptions with boarding school and perhaps a study abroad exchange year. But so we are so excited because we're meeting with different families. We're doing also some one-on-one coaching and counseling with individual teenagers to help with the transition. So we offer a range of different services and things like that. And I'm currently local in Michigan, and Michael Pollock does a lot of work with TCK teens and universities in the Midwest of the U.S. And so I've had the privilege and opportunity to team up with him on a couple of the retreats, and I speak there under the name of Intercultural Transitions.
That's exciting. And I hope to see you in person, actually, in March, when we're at the conference for the Families and Global Transition coming up in The Hague.
Yes.
So that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being here. It's been wonderful. Lovely to hear some top advice for our families that are listening. I'm sure that you'll help make that transition just a little less bumpy. So thank you, Megan.
Yes. Again, it's been wonderful to speak with you, Sunday. Thank you for having me.
So if you're listening to Megan and her advice, it's, you know, this idea of the daunting nature of raising third culture teens and sending them off to whatever's next for them can feel overwhelming. But what we're looking at, you know, from the research, from tested, from real life experience of teens and families across the world, is that some mindful planning can really do a lot to ease the transition, that communication, really high quality communication to create that connection, and enabling your children to experiment with autonomy and prepare them for the transition outside of the home, just like you would for any global move. So there is a light at the end of the tunnel for those of you who are also feeling a bit daunted by that, because there's so much work that's been done out there, and you can find it in wonderful references that we've mentioned today, the Bible of TCKs, again, from David C. Pollack and Ruth Van Recken. And we'll put some resources for you on the website. So here, I'm going to leave you with some advice for you, as if you are a parent who would like to help your TCK. These are some things you can do that are quite simple. Number one, listen and try to understand. Two, comfort and be gentle. Three, don't preach. Four, forgive. And my favorite, number five, assume you are.